From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A weekend power outage at Iran's uranium enrichment facility in Natanz is apparently the stimulus for increased hostilities on Monday between Iran and Israel. Iran blamed the incident on Israeli spies. This was Saeed Khatibzadeh, who's a spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry, answering reporters' questions at a press conference on Monday.
In connection with that, there have been different analyses raised. Some say that this is sabotage by the Zionists. I want to ask you about the latest regarding this incident, and what does the foreign ministry think about the incident, which some call sabotage? Given that, should Iran stop nuclear negotiations or what? And also regarding Mr. Lavrov's trip to Iran, if you could possibly give us some explanation, what should be on the agenda? Well, the incident that happened at the Natanz facility, the Zionist regime had said time and again, and we've also been hearing from different sources, and they confirm this, that the Zionist regime has been behind this. Of course, I'm pleased that there has been no human loss or environmental contamination. This could have definitely resulted into a disaster. It could be a crime against humanity, but this is natural of the aggressive Zionist regime. But if they were trying to kind of curb the Iranian nuclear capability, I should say that conversely, the entire centrifuges that have been put out of order due to this have been the IR-1 version, the old version. And, you know, they were going to be replaced by the more advanced ones. And we have the capability, as we speak, to replace them with the most advanced centrifuges. That's what was going to happen. If they were trying to dent the process of lifting the sanctions against Iran, definitely they will not reach their objectives, and the trap that they have actually planned, nobody will be entrapped in that. I mean, the goods occupying regime, given that measure, they tried to take revenge on the Iranian people over their patience and resilience in line with the removal of sanctions. Iran's response will be vengeance on the Zionist regime, which will happen in due time and at the right place and right time. I should also mention the fact that no negotiations will happen in Vienna. I've said that on multiple occasions, that what's happening in Vienna is not nuclear talks. They are technical negotiations in line with the removal of the brutal sanctions. Iran, P4 plus one, the European Union, actually within the JCPOA, we have had a negotiation once, and that has been over the JCPOA. The provisions and articles are there. They're finalized. So we're not negotiating on the nuclear issue. What we're talking about is the removal of sanctions. And the removal of sanctions, as the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has said, if we could do anything. Well, regarding Mr. Lavrov's trip to Iran, I will tell you about the details in a few hours. But in addition to a meeting with the distinguished Minister of Foreign Affairs and also the distinguished President of the Islamic League, there will also be an agreement on comprehensive cooperation. For 10 years, we have had this agreement, and it was just expired. It was extended twice, 5 years terms. And this meeting, that agreement will also be signed. And tomorrow, we'll have all those arrangements in here in Tehran before the beginning of the holy months of Ramadan. Mr. Ismaili from ANA.
Salam, Janab Khatibzadeh. Khasta nabashid.
Salam.
Do you hear me? Yes, go ahead. A senior U.S. official has said after the Vienna talks that Washington will not lift all the sanctions at a go at once, and sanctions related to terrorism, missile-related issues, and human rights, they will remain in place. This is in contravention of Iran's policies. And the South Korean Prime Minister yesterday said that Iran-South Korea relations is contingent upon the revival of the JCPOA. If you could comment on that too. Well, Iran's policies regarding the issue of the return of the United States to its JCPOA-related obligation commitments, the Iran's stance has been clear in the past 4 years and also in the past couple of months since the new administration has taken office. So the White House, the U.S. has tried to destroy the nuclear deal and also all interests that Iran would enjoy as per the deal. This is what the U.S. has tried its best to do. So there is no difference between any sanctions. Time and again, American officials have announced that they will impose sanctions with the aim of putting maximum pressure on the Iranian people, with the aim of torpedoing the nuclear deal and for no one to be able to revive the deal. So sometimes you hear some contradictory comments regarding the sanctions. You should not take them very seriously, take it with a pinch of salt. You know, some people in the United States, they go all the way to Vienna before they go back to their commitments, that they want to negotiate with a P4+1 to see how they could preserve Trump's failed legacy. This is a cognitive issue, problem that some American officials suffer from. They need to know that the course that they have adopted for correction of their mistakes, that needs to be in a perfect and flawless form so that Iran would give the due response. Iran's policies, as have been declared, they will be followed exactly as they have been declared. Now, as for the visit of the Korean Prime Minister to Iran, I think that you have followed that in the media. The one important issue on the agenda is the unblocking of the Iranian funds in Korea. This is a debt on the Korean side, and it has nothing to do with the extra-regional sanctions of the United States. The relations have been harmed to a great extent because of inaction and because of this approach. Of course, there have been some solutions that they have been discussed. We need to wait and see which one and at what level and to what extent would become operational. Mr. Gudarzi from Faratop. Hello, Mr. Khatibzadeh. Yes, go ahead. We can hear you clearly. I have two questions. Given the fact that the policy that Iran has adopted regarding the Iraqi Kurdistan region, and that the region is a strategic ally and partner that Iran, that's the way Iran regards it. Economically, given the presence of Turkey, China, and the European Union, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and in the Economic Department of the Foreign Ministry, what strategies and policies do you have to expand relations with the Iraqi Kurdistan region? And also, recently we have had some high-ranking officials from Iran and Iraq meeting each other, but still, Iraqi officials are not paying what they owe to the Iranian government, and they cite some excuses. Some media says that there are some personal issues. What measures have you taken? Iran-Iraq relations are multi-layer and they are strategic. So in all issues, in all reciprocal issues, we have had great consultations going on between the two sides. You know, provincial relations and relations at different levels exist, be it with the Iraqi Kurdistan Kurdistan region or with other parts of Iraq. We're working on it, and we have very close proximity, you know, with the Iraqi Kurdistan region and with a number of our provinces in Iran. So we're following up, and we're persisting with the relations. We have economic relations, right? We have our consular offices there operating actively regarding transit issues and travels. We have had very close cooperation with the Iraqi Kurdistan. And the other question was, I just forgot the second question. What was the second question? I just slipped my mind. Regarding Iraq's debts. Okay. Now, I should say, as for the money that Iraq owes to us in the course of the trip of the Iraqi foreign minister to Iran, we had thorough discussions regarding this. The governor of our central bank also visited the officials there. Some measures have been taken. There are some other measures. Of course, there are some obstacles in the way, as some reports indicate, but we have made some progress. So if you allow me, I will just suffice to this extent for now. From Ilna, Mr. Darvish. Hello, Mr. Spokesman. I want to ask you, you know, it seems that Iran and the United States have had different definitions of the level of sanctions and also the issue of return of Iran's going back to full commitment, and U.S. also returned to it. There are different interpretations and definitions by the two sides. It seems that Iranians believe that even non-JCPOA-related sanctions should be removed so that Iran would go back to full compliance, and it also seems that they think differently. Second question I want to ask about the verification. This verification process that you're talking about, how is that going to happen, and what time period, how long will it take? Well, we have stated clearly that we need to go to the situation in 2017. Those labels that are imaginary and arbitrarily that some the Trump administration has, you know, labeled some administrations, they have been reimposed, some of them have been relabeled. We think that they're not credible. I mean, basically, with the domestic issues, we have nothing to do with the domestic policies of the United States. Well, the U.S. has its own commitments and obligations within Resolution 2231. Article 29 of the JCPOA expressly states the U.S. commitments. It's been stipulated there that Washington needs to stop to just avoid doing whatever that would keep Iran from normalizing its commercial activities. So all those sanctions have been against the JCPOA, and it makes no difference. It's just part of the illegal so-called maximum pressure campaign of the United States imposed against us. Of course, we have nothing to do with Americans. We have this list that will submit to the Joint Commission, and it will be finalized by the Joint Commission of JCPOA. And our stances are crystal clear. And as for the verification, I should say that it is still maybe too soon to reach that stage. We're still working on the preliminary issues in the Commission, but verification is not going to be very hard. If the United States really wants to return, and if they take measures before the deadline that they would announce, most of these issues are verifiable. I mean, there is a chain of various issues that they're interrelated, and all of them need to be effectively, not on paper, I'm stressing, all of them need to be effectively acted accordingly. I mean, the sale of oil, for instance, together with the transfer of money, with with insurance of the shipping lines. You know, there is this whole chain of, you know, the process that need to be simultaneously dealt with. And they're easily verifiable with a number of countries. We are in close contact. Now we have had daily, you know, interactions with them. So it's not going to be hard if the United States really and honestly and genuinely wants to remove the sanctions. It can be verified. Of course, the details need some sophisticated issues within the Joint Commission. We were still far from it. Ms. Sajati from Iran Press.
Mr. Hafizadeh, I want to ask you two questions. My first question is about Vienna talks on Wednesday. Does Iran accept temporary lifting of sanctions or waiver? And in this case, what is the guarantee in order to not go back to the sanctions again? And my second question is regarding what happened in Natanz. You told us what I want to ask you specifically, that various news heard regarding what happened in Natanz. I want to ask you exactly the view of the Islamic Republic of Iran regarding what happened in Natanz. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What happened in Natanz was a bold act of nuclear terrorism on Iranian soil. There has been no casualty or contamination reported, but it could very much resulted in a catastrophic situation. So it can be considered under the category of crimes against humanity, which the Israeli regime has been doing that for many years now. Iran definitely would reserve all rights to respond under the Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, and we have started to communicate with the international authorities and United Nations in this regard. On the first question that you asked, there would be no first of all talks between Iran and United States, direct or indirect talks. All sanctions, as I have said, should be removed, regardless of they have been imposed, reimposed, or relabeled. From our point of view, all of those labels are FOX and are anti-JCPOA, so they should be all removed at once, verifiably and comprehensively. Thank you very much. آقای ترقی نژاد ایرنا، حالتون چطور آقای ترقی نژاد؟
مستر ترقی نژاد فرام ایرنا. سلام آقای. How are you doing, Mr. Arghunjay? Feeling better?
تشکر، لطف شما.
Thank you very much.
ممنون، بهتر هستم. صدای منو دارین؟
Yeah, I'm better.
بله بله، خوشحالم که صدای شما رو دارین.
Good to hear you again. Thank you. Now, I want to ask you about the very same question regarding Natanz. Unfortunately, some people inside the country, they are calling this incident, instead of blaming Israel, that they're blaming negotiators. They say this shows the weakness of the negotiators. And they say that negotiations for removal of sanctions should come to a halt immediately. So how do you want to respond to them? And what recommendation do you have for such individuals? You know, back and forth, they're going to the foreign ministry and they're raising allegations against it. The response to the Natanz incident is vengeance on Israel. Israel cannot change the game and cannot pay out of the Iranian people's pocket. I mean, if the Zionist regime, the Gossack Bank regime, in the past few months, they have taken a number of measures aimed at actually trapping, you know, in the past few days, they have been making some propaganda campaign, and the objectives are clear, and the elite and the Iranians all are cognizant of what the Zionist regime has been doing. The Minister of Foreign Affairs has its own responsibility, and that's to act within the macro policies of the Islamic Republic in line with the removal of the brutal U.S. sanctions. We should try our best to in that direction, and that's what we're trying to do. And simultaneously, Israel will also receive its due response. Mr. Jalali, Press TV.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. Khatibzadeh.
It's actually time for our own correspondent to ask that question. I would like to ask for some time so that we could hear Yousef's question.
Sanctions such as ISA, the Iran Sanctions Act, and visa program are against the terms of the JCPOA. So what is Iran's stance with regards to sanctions that were put in place in previous U.S. administrations, such as the Obama administration? Should they be included in the list of the sanctions that need to be lifted before Iran returns to full compliance? Thank you.
United States domestic politics is not our concern at all. Yet we do believe that the President of the United States has the full authority should they want to, and if there is a will to actually do that. I have to also state here that we do believe that all the sanctions, regardless of their Fox labels, should be removed because all of them are very much anti-JCPOA. We have to get back to January 2017, and based on the paragraph 29 of the JCPOA, United States has to refrain from any action that undermines Iran's normalizations, international trade and international economy.
Again, that was from a press conference on Monday about the alleged Israeli attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear site. We heard from Foreign Ministry spokesperson Saeed Khatibzadeh, who was fielding questions from reporters. There was also a press conference later Monday held by Israel's Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd J. Austin, and we bring you that press conference in its entirety.
Secretary Austin, welcome to Jerusalem. Your visit here so soon after assuming office is a testament to the importance you attach to our friendship and to our alliance. You just said a moment ago in our meeting, you said, we're not just allies, we're family. We call that mishpoche. And there is so much truth in that statement that our peoples instinctively understand. As you know, the U.S.-Israel Defense Partnership has continually expanded over successive administrations. And our cooperation is crucial in dealing with the many threats confronting both the United States and Israel, threats that you are very familiar with from your distinguished service in Iraq and by your command in CENTCOM. In the Middle East, there is no threat that is more serious, more dangerous, more pressing than that posed by the fanatical regime in Iran. Iran continues to support terrorists around the world in five continents, threatening civilians everywhere. Iran has never given up its quest for nuclear weapons and the missiles to deliver them. And Iran consistently and outrageously calls for Israel's annihilation and works towards that goal. Mr. Secretary, we both know the horrors of war. We both understand the importance of preventing war, and we both agree that Iran must never possess nuclear weapons. My policy as Prime Minister of Israel is clear. I will never allow Iran to obtain the nuclear capability to carry out its genocidal goal of eliminating Israel. And Israel will continue to defend itself against Iran's aggression and terrorism. You have just come from Yad Vashem. We, a few days ago, marked the anniversary of the destruction of our people in the Holocaust. And I think, as I know also from our conversation, that you understand perfectly well that when we say it could never happen again, we mean that we will never let it happen again. This is something that I think you, the President, and the American people respect, and we appreciate that. Secretary Austin, I can say with great confidence that Israel has no greater ally and certainly no greater mishpocha than the United States of America. And I can say equally that the United States has no greater ally and no better mishpocha than the State of Israel. So welcome to Jerusalem.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Mr. Prime Minister, for the warm welcome, and again, my deepest thanks and appreciation to the people of Israel for their gracious hospitality. It is indeed a privilege to be here in Jerusalem on my first visit as Secretary of Defense, which was made even more special as I had the opportunity to visit the World Holocaust Remembrance Center. I was especially moved by the stories of the victims and the survivors. And to the Prime Minister's point, we must never forget their sacrifice, their heartache, and their loss. And may their memory be a blessing. And let it always be a solemn reminder of our duty to be ever vigilant against mass atrocities. Today, I was also grateful for the opportunity to meet with the Prime Minister to discuss a number of security issues that are important to our two countries. And I wanted to reaffirm the administration's strong commitment to Israel and to the Israeli people. And that's why I thought it was important that we meet face to face and to express our earnest desire for close consultations with Israel as we address shared challenges in the region. And I also wanted to underscore my personal pledge to strengthening Israel's security and ensuring Israel's qualitative military edge. The close and strong ties that we enjoy with Israel are central to regional stability and security in the Middle East, and we both agree that we must continue to work closely together to enhance the U.S.-Israel strategic partnership. And so we discuss ways to deepen and expand our long-standing defense relationship in the face of regional threats and other security challenges. And I affirm the department's support for our ongoing diplomatic efforts to normalize relations between Israel and Arab and Muslim majority nations. Mr. Prime Minister, I'm grateful for today's discussion to advance shared defense priorities and maintain close cooperation between the United States and Israel. And I am confident that together we can chart a path toward enduring peace in this region and advance an open and stable order now and in the years ahead. Again, thank you so much for a wonderful 2 days, and I look forward to seeing you again real soon in the future.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and thank you all.
Tensions between the U.S. and its NATO allies on the one hand and Russia on the other have continued to rise. There are reports that the U.S. is sending warships into the Black Sea and that these are being countered by Russian naval vessels. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has held meetings with the foreign ministers of a number of neighboring countries over the past few days. We'll have more on that tomorrow. It appears the right wing has won the presidential election in Ecuador. We'll have that and some more South American election results also tomorrow.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.